My guest Rodney Dangerfield created his comic persona around his signature line.
One of my problems, you know, I don't get no respect. No respect at all. Every time I get in an elevator, the operator says the same thing to me. Basement? I mean, no respect. The other day, I was standing in front of a big apartment house. The doorman asked me to get him a cab. Same thing with my friends, no respect. My friends tell me when I call them on a phone, I should use a certain signal. I should let it ring twice, hang up, and don't call back.
At the age of 82, Rodney Dangerfield is still complaining about respect, but in reality, he's revered by many younger comics, not only for his stand-up comedy, but for his performances in such movies as Caddyshack, Back to School, and Natural Born Killers. Jim Carrey wrote the introduction for Dangerfield's new autobiography, It's Not Easy Being Me, a lifetime of no respect, but plenty of sex and drugs. Although Dangerfield hopes to perform again, he's had some pretty major health problems in the past few years, including heart bypass surgery, a heart attack, and surgery to bypass clogged arteries in his brain. He came to a studio in New York to record our interview. Rodney Dangerfield, welcome to Fresh Air. Now, I got to ask you, you know, your comedy is built around your most famous line, I don't get no respect, and you've said that The Godfather inspired you to come up with it. How did it come to you? Did you think of it the first time you saw The Godfather movie? Like, how did
Maybe
it actually...
Maybe not the first time, but I heard the word respect. When The Godfather came out, all you hear was, if she's with me, you show her respect. I want respect. I'm with him. Okay, don't know respect, respect, go out of your mind, you know, with respect. So I wrote a joke about respect, and see what the reaction would be. This is the first joke I wrote. I was working in a place called Upstairs at the Duplex in Greenwich Village. And I told the joke, I said, the first time I said, trouble me, I don't get no respect. I said, when I was a kid, they played hide and seek. They wouldn't even look for me, you know? And that was the first joke I wrote. And and the audience came over to me afterwards and said, hey, me too, Roddy, no respect. Me too, Roddy, no respect. And all of a sudden I found an image, you know? And it's been good for me. I mean, I've written probably over 500 no respect jokes, and all in that no respect theme, you know.
Now, you started doing the respect stuff when you came back to show business at around the age of 40. You had left show business for around 12 years. You had a family. You needed to make money to support your family. And you went into the aluminum siding business for a while.
Right.
What was your act like the first time around?
When I quit showbiz, give you an idea how well I was doing at the time I quit. I was the only one who knew I quit.
What was your act like back then, when you were in your 20s?
I was immature and young. I came back at 40. I had an image, and I was, you know what I mean? That was it. My act was more of a immature material, I guess. I'd show a fellow driving a car and coming out with his girl, or a fellow goes to a dance and looks over the girls and makes remarks, you know, something like that.
And you did impressions when you were in your 20s, didn't you?
Yes, when I was young, I did impressions. I did W.C. Fields and Al Jolson. Amateur nights I was working, you know. I did impressions, only those two. I did a Chinese act, On Too Long.
So, and you sang too, right?
Yes, I sang. I sang Jolson. I did his numbers. In fact, I once did a show with Al Jolson. I was a kid, 21, in Atlantic City, and he was doing a benefit show there. And they asked me to go on and do 5 minutes before him to warm up the audience. I said, okay. So,
Now, when you started performing, you didn't use the name Rodney Dangerfield. That was a name.
My legal name is Jack Roy, R-O-Y. Mm-hmm. And when I started performing, and that was the name I used the first time in my career. When I came back the second time, then I became Rodney Dangerfield. And with a name like that, if you don't hit, you're an idiot, you know? So
Now, I know it was an MC who gave you the name Rodney Dangerfield, right?
It was the owner of a club up in Inwood, New York, Inwood Lounge, he owned. And at that time, I was just coming back to show business. I don't know how good I am or this or that, so I asked him not to put my name in a paper, to make up some other phony name of some kind. He did that, and he put in the paper Rodney Dangerfield. So I walked out, and the club was the same people there from 15 years ago. They heard I was working, and they came back. And so they yelled out at me when I walked on. They said, Rodney Dangerfield? I said, look, if you're going to change your name, change it.
Now, you were born with the last name of Roy, but that Roy was actually your father's stage name, his last
That's
name.
Right.
His birth name was Cohen.
His first name was Phil, Philip.
Mm-hmm.
Philip Cohen is his legal name. But he became Roy and Arthur. Arthur was my uncle, and they did a vaudeville act, you know, comedy vaudeville act.
What was the act like?
They would break plates. They would throw plates into the theater like a boomerang, and it would swing over the people's heads and come back to the stage. It was quite a feat to do it, but they did it, that mostly in their act. That was part of it, you know. And other than that, there was some little juggling and humor, whatever went on there, you know.
Now, I know you weren't close to your father, and he really didn't even live with the family when you were growing up. But I'm wondering if you went to see him much, if you saw his act much.
I never saw his act. I was too young, but I used to go to see him twice a year. He lived in New York, a half hour from Kew Gardens, where we lived. And I'd take a subway in, 10 years old, 12 years old, whatever it was, and I'd meet him for an hour. Then he'd walk me back to the subway, and I'd go home. My father saw me 2 hours a year. That's what it amounted to.
So did it make you want to be in show business?
Who knows? I don't know. You know, show me some love. Show me some... Let me hear the laughs, the applause. I'll take love any way I can get it, you know? And I guess who knows, to get love, if you're in show business, to try and make some money, but there's no money in it when you start, so it's just for, because you like to do it, I guess.
It seems like you had a really rough childhood. You never got to see your father, but 2 hours a year you got to see him. You didn't really like your mother. She sounds like she was a really difficult woman.
Yeah.
Was there anything that was fun or funny in your childhood? Were there...
Nothing funny at all.
Seriously? So you think you had an unhappy childhood all the time?
Extremely. I never went to a ball game, nor took me anywhere. My mother was very, very unfair the way she operated. Well, I think you read the story. I saved up $100 for selling ice cream on the beach. She took it. You know what I mean?
Did you start being funny? I mean, if your childhood was so miserable, were you funny when you were a child? Did you make other people laugh, even if you weren't laughing?
Yeah, I guess I started being funny when I was about 13, 14. I used to mind a newsstand, and a friend of mine who I went to school would come down, I'd make him laugh for an hour and a half.
So what were the first jokes you remember telling on stage?
When I was... 17 years old, I was booked by an agent named Jack Miller, who packed about 10 people in his car in New York, and we all drove out to Newark. We did a job in the theater there. And he paid everyone $2 each, and you got paid in quarters. Why? No one ever knew, but you get paid in quarters. The first joke I told out there, and it still got a laugh for me, you know? I said, look in the audience tonight, the women look like a beautiful bed of roses. Of course there's a weed here and there, you know. So that was the joke I told when I was 17.
When you decided to get back into show business, one of the ways you did it was by opening up your own club.
Well, I'll tell you, the club was opened way after I was in show business. I was already... doing okay when I opened the club,
mm-hmm.
You know. I opened the club for, one big reason was I had two small kids at home, you know, about 4 and 8, and I couldn't leave town and leave them alone. I had a domestic situation that was difficult, you know. So I decided to open a nightclub that I can be in New York or work in New York only, and my kids won't be alone, you know.
How often did you perform at it yourself?
When the club opened, I worked there for 9 years. And Then I would start taking breaks, and I mean, going out.
Did you have to come up with a lot of new material since you were staying in the same city? What comics usually do is they travel around, so the people in Minneapolis haven't heard the material that they did in New York, and you can use the same act. Yeah.
Everyone in my club, as in many clubs, there's never the same people. It is always changing because my business all came from out of town. So if I was on a Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, they would know, he would say, I'm working at my own place, Dangerfield, in New York. And a lot of people would come to New York and then come to the club, you know, just do the shut on Carson every 3 or 4 months. And that would keep business coming in from out of town.
You helped a lot of comics get started at your club.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to name some of them?
Yeah, well, Jim Carrey. I met Jim, though. He worked the club, too, but I met him. I was working in Toronto. They told me to catch this fellow to think he's pretty good. And I caught him. He was doing impressions, and he was great, great. So I asked him to work with me, and the first job we went to was Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, which was a big deal for him, he told me, you know what I mean? And after that, he opened for me for 2 years on the road. So I was directly responsible to help him get in the States and everything else. Sam Kinison is one of my proteges, or was. He's a genius, Sam Kinison was. You know, he's too much, and I thought he was great. And I put him on my show twice he was on. And Jerry...
Seinfeld?
Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld. He was on the show, too. And a lot of other, Bob Saget, Louis Anderson, Rita Rudner.
I don't think this was at your club, but I know Andy Kaufman used to open for you.
Yeah, yeah. I loved Andy, you know. He opened for me. I asked if he wanted to do a couple of jobs for me. He says, yeah, I said, okay. And Andy's bit, you see, has become on as a different character and make the audience hate him. That was a bit. In his act, they were coming on stage to hit him. They hated him, you know what I mean? And that's what he would do. And I got a big kick out of it, and people told me, well, I have a guy die for you. He'll get laughs. I says, no, he's great. It's all right. I can walk on after him. It's okay. He was a very talented guy, and he was different. For example, the whole audience was booing him, absolutely booing him. Get off your bum, boo, boo, right? And so Andy says, now, there's a few of you out there who are ruining it for the rest of you. But the whole place wanted them off. You know what I mean? In fact, the second night, the boss got smart. He put a huge net right across the whole stage because they were going to throw things at him. He knew it, right? And he did it. It worked okay. He only got hit twice. An egg went through the net and a tomato, I think. But the rest of it, it stopped it.
You know, you mentioned in your book that you've had problems with depression over the years.
Yeah, I've been depressed many times.
This seems to be true of a lot of comics.
I don't know. Depression, I think, has no areas. It can happen to an electrician, to a dock worker, anybody, you know. But I've experienced it, I guess, my whole life, you know. When I was 15, I was writing jokes just to get away from it all. I wanted to escape from life, so I wrote jokes. You know.
What was awful about your life?
My life? Well, being brought up with no father and a mother who was extremely selfish. Like, she never made me breakfast my entire life. Always got up at 11 o'clock. But before I'd go to school, I'd mind the newsstand for an hour and a half. That I always had the same breakfast, orangeade, donut, and coffee. That was a home-cooked meal to me.
Did your mother ever see you perform? Did she live to see you become very successful?
No. My father did. In fact, I flew him up here from Florida to come to the club and spend a night or two in the apartment with me, so... He flew up there. He saw my whatever success I had at the time.
Did your relationship change when he saw how successful you were?
No, I don't think that had nothing to do with it. My relationship changed because I became older and I forgave him for everything. He cried to me, and he said, will you forgive me? He meant for never seeing me, never, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
2 hours a year, I told him. And knowing my mother, he couldn't have been happy with her, you know. I liked my father better as a person, you know.
You write in your book that your father's funeral was one of the loneliest moments of your life.
Yeah, right, right.
And that you were the only one
there.
I was
there alone, you know?
Yeah, you were the only one at the funeral.
And as they were lowering his body into the ground, one of the workers comes over to me and says, hey, Rodney, can I have your autograph? What timing, you know?
Can you talk a little bit about how you put together your act? Do jokes just come to you whole, or do you have to, like, work at them and refine them?
No, sometimes you hit one right off the bat. It's funny, boom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you contrive. You got to sit and write one. Like, I wrote a joke, you know, the other day. It was in the book, I think, you know. I'm getting old. I had an accident. I was arrested for hit and walk.
And then how do you figure out how to put them all together to make up, like, an act?
Well, I have to put together a stand-up, which is usually about 8 jokes, and a panel, which is about 30 jokes. So I need approximately 38 new jokes each time. And what you do is you take them and you put them, you make a necklace out of it. You put them together so one follows another correctly, you know, and they make sense. I don't know what else to say. You put them together, and I guess sometimes you can't tell people exactly how you do something, you know? It's
sure.
Difficult.
Having built so much of your career on this don't get no respect image, do you realize how appreciated you are now in comedy? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, I in my own head, though, you see, I can never be a big shot. And I just... like, if I check in a hotel and the bellhop grabs my bag, I feel like I should be taking the bag, you know? And, but I appreciate the fact that I'm popular with people. It's a very nice feeling, rather to be unpopular. So, I'm happy about the way things went.
So, are you performing anymore?
I haven't performed in a long time now, about a year and a half, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I was recuperating from an operation twice or something like that. But I will be performing very shortly and go back and see if I can fool them again.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much, Terry.
Rodney Dangerfield's new autobiography is called It's Not Easy Being Me. A new album featuring him singing called Romeo Rodney is scheduled to be released at the end of the year.